moment that we have left, we want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Good evening, everybody. Sorry I had my button on mute. Welcome to the Open Paddock Podcast. I promise I've only just started drinking. That's why we had the issue there. Sean joining you as I do every week. And this week I have with me just Douglas Patterson. Hello, Doug.
Hello. And no, my first name isn't just.
Yes, it is. We are here this week. Mike is off in the woods playing with Smokey the Bear, hopefully not getting killed or mauled by them. I check the news quite often to make sure that he has not been mauled by bears. So here's hoping that he's all right, and I'm sure he'll be listening to this as he transits back from Tennessee, place where I wish I could go. But it is what it is. But let's see. All right, well, we got a lot to talk about tonight, obviously. Tons of news across the whole entire motorsport spectrum. You are listening to Open Paddock Live Radio, brought to you by ETV. Our engineer this week is John Wessling. And you are also listening to us on the HD radio network via your iTunes. Just go to the radio section, click sports, and you'll see the ETV SIM broadcasting, or the ETV audio, you know, plug there, and you just give it a double click and you can listen to us live via iTunes or on your phone. So that's what we have going on tonight. What we're going to talk about is going to be motorsports in brief. We got
hopefully briefer than usual.
Hopefully briefer than usual. Not because we had a lot of news. We had a lot of news come out for a lot of the series that we like to talk about. Also, we're going to be getting into the iZot IndyCar series. We've got a 2013 schedule, which I'll be critical of when we get there. And we also have some great stuff from Spike Rogan, our resident Pocono advocate. He was actually at the announcement this morning to talk about where they kind of officially announced that Pocono would be returning to the iZot IndyCar series as part of a Triple Crown. But we'll get into all of that with comments from Mario Andretti as well as iZot IndyCar CEO Randy Benar. So we have all that stuff. Great work from Spike. And again, thanks so much to him for taking time out of his busy schedule to head down to Pocono. And really, honestly, Spike's done such a great job advocating for that race. I mean, he's been advocating for Pocono ever since I've known him with his Bring IndyCar Back to Pocono social media fight, if you will. And I mean, it's finally good to see that the fruits of his labor. You know, he's going to have an IndyCar race. It's going to be a 400-miler, and it's just great news, obviously, for IndyCar and for Spike. And I just want to say congrats to Spike and a phenomenal job, honestly, on everything that he's done to try and bring that back.
You know, they really need to make him Grand Marshal of this event, or at the very least, Mario needs to take him around in the two-seater.
Yeah,
but that story's coming up later.
Yeah, I would like to go in the two-seater with Mario Andretti around Pocono. I have no problem with that. Like I said before the show, I'd be lined up, and yeah, I'd be lined up, and we'd be good to go. But let's go ahead and get into it. Let's talk about motorsports in brief, and we're going to start with the WRC. It's huge news, obviously. Not huge news, the first part, but a couple of huge news items that came across through the World Motorsport Council meeting that was held just recently. The first being that the Red Bull Media House is, in fact, going to promote the WRC in 2013. As you remember, we talked about this a number of weeks ago, as it was heavily rumored that, you know, Red Bull Media House is going to be taken over, and that's exactly what they are going to do. So this is what's going to be happening. This is just a brief rundown of what was said, at the World Motorsport Council. So first off, the promoter is going to be Red Bull Media House. They are going to start to work on television. The Sportsman Media Group and Red Bull Media House, are going to be the new global promoter, and what they're going to be doing is promoting very aggressive investment and development into the WRC as far as TV and a digital media strategy with a lot of live television coming our way, hopefully, for the World Rally Championship. Good stuff, because as you remember this year, we didn't have any really solid TV deals put together. And for most of it, a lot of the guys were told to, you know, kind of fend for themselves as far as promoting and getting television coverage and all that for the WRC. So it's good to see that Red Bull, a solid name that does great work, that is the Red Bull Media House. Again, they worked with a Nitro Circus movie and really brought a lot of that kind of cinema-esque feeling to Nitro Circus and did a great job. So hopefully they'll be able to do another fantastic job with the World Rally Championship, a sport that really lends itself to television in the sense that it's such a beautiful picture with all of the surrounding scenery and all of that stuff going on. So it really is television friendly from that standpoint, but how they plan and attack actually covering the events remains to be seen. We can look forward to announcements out of them here soon. Assistance for the WRC teams. There are cost reduction measures going into place to try and lure more entries into the WRC. So teams competing in 2013's World Rally Championship will now only have to contest one round outside of Europe. So teams must, however, still nominate and take part in a minimum of seven events. Current WRC teams include the Adapto World Rally team of Mads Osberg and the Qatar World Rally team of Nasser Al-Attiyah. This I'm actually reading verbatim from the WRC's webpage. They have a nice breakdown of the meeting there. Also, we had news, and we'll kind of get into it just a little bit more. WRC 2 is going to come back. Basically, what this is going to be a restructuring of the lower level championships. The current S2000 World Rally cars will be replaced by FIA WRC2 championship cars. And what this is going to entail is really the S2000 cars, the R4s, and the new R5s, which is going to be specifically in kind of a group in category. Some of that will fit in the WRC2, and there will be a title for teams, drivers, and co-drivers, just like they have for the WRC. Good news there, as we remember, the R4 was supposed to kind of bridge the gap between the Group N cars and the S2000s. Those kind of never really came to fruition, but they are certainly working on trying to bridge that gap for sure. WRC is going 3 is going to be a new championship. Not really a new championship, but one that
it replaces the PWRC, I believe, doesn't it?
It's a new name for what they're going to call replacing the PWRC. So the production cars where we see the R3s, the R2s, and the R1s. It's going to be, let's see, it says here on the website, replaced by the FIA WRC3 Championship, including Group R cars with two-wheel drives, R3, R2, and R1. Again, titles given out for teams and drivers, co-drivers alike. For those who score the most points in 5 of the 6 events, so you'll have one scratch event that you can compete in. So, and the JWRC is going to return. As you remember, we have the FIA WRC Academy, where America's very own, or the United States' very own, Chris Duplessis competed a couple times and really showed what he was made of in the R2 Fiestas. They are going to drop the WRC Academy name and bring back the Junior World Rally Championship, because that is kind of a age-restricted category, so you want to make sure that you label it properly. And that's what we're going to see. Let's see. And there are more cost-cutting measures, as the website says, to limit costs and encourage participation for 2013. The use of the latest evolution of parts homologated by manufacturers will not be mandatory for World Rally cars entered by drivers not scoring points in the Manufacturers' Championship. This also applies to all cars in the S2000 category with a 1.6-liter turbo engine. So, we also had a calendar that was released as well. So good stuff. Honestly, it's going to be great. it's going to be great to see all of this come to fruition. It was really cool, too, because both Peugeot and Ford are building R5 versions of the Fiesta and the Peugeot 208. Both cars look very nice. I've seen the R5 Peugeot pictures, and it looks very cool. And it's good to see a name like Peugeot back in the WRC where they kind of belong. As you know, they had a kind of a meh in the IRC, which will now be known as the European Rally Championship. They had kind of a less than stellar showing once Skoda showed up and just started beating the snot out of them. So it's going to be interesting to definitely see that come to fruition. Also, we're going to have new manufacturers, Doug. We're going to have, obviously, Volkswagen this year, and we knew that was coming as they've been very aggressive in their testing and their preparation going forward. And it looks like they've got a car that is ready to go. And a great article from Mike Shaw, a guy who's actually in our chat room right now, Oregon Wings on Twitter, if you want to follow me, did a great job on openpaddock.net breaking out the World Motorsport Council meeting. We've got Volkswagen that's coming to the WRC, as we already knew, and we also got a pleasant surprise at the Paris Auto Show where Hyundai announced that they will bring their i20 car to the WRC. So now we have roughly five manufacturers, if you still count Mini, because I do believe that Mini still plans on having a presence in the WRC. I don't know how.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you know, the problem with Mini is they're shackled to, or had been, to a really wretched outfit. But it is really nice to see a lot of the manufacturers coming back. And, you know, I'm not a big Francophile at all. Those of you who know me know I'm not a huge fan of French anything. But I am happy to see Peugeot come back and working on the 208, at least at the R5 level. Because I say that because I have such fond memories of watching Grunholm just obliterate people in his little Peugeot. It was so cool to watch. But you know, I think of all this news, probably the absolute best news is Red Bull Media House coming in to promote and bringing some consistency to the promotion and to the television production. This haphazard event by event type of thing, where there is no consistency, just absolutely kills your viewership. I think IndyCar found that out this past year, hopping back and forth between ABC and NBC Sports. We'll talk about that later when we get into the 2013 schedule, because that's there's some important changes in regards to that. But yeah, the additional manufacturers coming in is cool. You know, the reorganization is interesting. I don't know how significant it is in terms of the overall benefit to the WRC, maybe rally as a whole, perhaps. You know, really just having some consistent promotion is absolutely critical.
Oh, I agree 100%. And I also think that Hyundai coming to the WRC is huge news out of all of it as well. I mean, you can talk all you want all day about the class restructuring and some of the introduction and the junior formulas. That's great. But it's really, a lot of it is just kind of lumping everything together because everything's so scattered at the lower levels, it seems, anymore. But I think that Hyundai is a great point to mention because Hyundai, you know, it still shows that for manufacturers of people who produce small cars, like Hyundai, like Ford, like Volkswagen. You know, it's really nice to see that Rally really is their big draw, I think. And you look at Volkswagen as a name, not necessarily as an empire, but Volkswagen is just as Volkswagen, and you know, and Ford, Citroen, and now Hyundai. I mean, their cars really, really just kind of embody what we want to see out of out of rally, the types of cars we want to see. Now, obviously, the days of Group B are gone forever, which is disappointing because those were always my favorite days.
Well, yes. I mean, you know, yes and no. We understand why they're gone.
Oh, well, yeah.
But that still doesn't mean we don't miss them.
Yeah.
But, you know, coming to this next year, you know, I think another big, big factor is Loeb running part-time. You know, he's preparing to move to the World Touring Car Championship, WTCC, in 2014, but he's going to be transitioning away from rally in 2013. This might allow someone else to win the championship this year. I'm still not convinced that someone's going to. I think running a part-time schedule, hell, he might still do it again. But at least someone actually has a better chance.
I mean, he could probably all he needs to do is show up to Monte Carlo and any other tarmac rally and maybe like Acropolis. I mean, he could show up for, what, like 7 or 8 rallies and probably still win the championship, honestly. And that's one of the interesting stories about the 2013 season is you've now got Sebastian Ogier, who's been lightning fast in his Skoda. I mean, this guy is just driving the wheels right off that damn thing. I mean, I'm surprised when he comes across the line that it doesn't just fall to pieces around him. But now you've got Ogier versus it's going to be Ogier versus Hirvonen versus Latvala. And there's not even news that Latvala is confirmed with Ford. There's some talking that Latvala could make a switch to another team still. What that team's going to be, I don't know. But, you know, there was rumor that Loeb told Latvala, hey, if you want to win a championship, you need to come to Citroën. Now, granted, I think next year for the part times where Loeb is not in the car, I think we'll see Thierry Neuville in the car. He's a lot of people think he deserves the chance, but you know he's just there's so much talent that's really going to be it's going to be a fantastic year next year. It's going to be interesting, as Mike points out, who's going to be in the Hyundai. So, you know, 2013, obviously not going to be competing for rally victories, but who could we see in Hyundai? I mean, there's a lot of great people, a lot of great rally drivers out there that we could watch and compete and challenge. But we'll get to that later as it unfolds. We have a whole off season to talk WRC. I'm really excited for 2013. I think 2013 has a chance to be just a real barn burner and really bring the WRC back to the motorsport community, where it rightfully belongs, as it's just an amazing form of motorsport, and it's always been my favorite. But you know, we'll see. So, okay, so let's talk about Formula One, because we had a lot of news in Formula One too. Holy cow! And it was big news. So,
surprising to some, but you know, I'm not so sold on how surprising some of this has been.
Well, yeah, if you remember back a couple weeks ago, Eddie Jordan came out on the BBC or wherever he's working now and said, hey, Lewis Hamilton is going to Mercedes and Niki Lauda is trying to advocate, you know, Hamilton to go to Mercedes in the promise that he was going to get like a management position if he could lure Lewis Hamilton to Mercedes away from McLaren, who's been kind of his team for a long time, in the sense that they, you know, kind of fostered him throughout his junior career. Well, it was actually came to fruition last week, late, I think it was Thursday all this came down. Lewis Hamilton will be joining the Mercedes AMG outfit and replacing Michael Schumacher, of all people. Yes, I weep. I weep at the news that a little twit like Lewis Hamilton can come in and replace a name like Michael Schumacher, but it is what it is. Hamilton is leaving McLaren Mercedes to join Nico Rosberg at Mercedes AMG. Schumacher is out the door. Nobody knows where he's going to end up or what he's going to do, as his future is uncertain now. And Sergio Perez, a guy who was overlooked by Ferrari for a 2013 seat, has now decided that he's going to sign with McLaren.
You know, I'm really happy for Perez getting a serious shot like this. This is fantastic. My thoughts on Perez is that it sucks to be Ferrari. you know, I don't know who they're waiting for. Maybe they've got someone that they're expecting to slot in 2014. But, yeah, they really missed out on not signing Perez. You know, McLaren really, I don't know exactly how to, what words to use here, but they really have taken a huge opportunity that Ferrari really passed on. Hamilton to Mercedes, everybody knows. Yeah, I'm a huge Mercedes fan. I love Mercedes, and I was so happy to see them come in as a manufacturer. Now they have Hamilton, and I don't know how I feel about that. You know, Hamilton's a fast driver, he is. However, man.
Yeah,
I don't know if I want him on my team. You know, he brings so much drama along with him. You know, it's not just the speed. He's he can be a little inconsistent, but he's not really much of a team player, is he?
No, and Hamilton, the thing about Hamilton, and this is what really I don't understand about this whole entire thing. Hamilton says he's going to Mercedes to win championships. I want whatever he's on, because that's just not going to happen. I'm going to say it now with 100% certainty that Lewis Hamilton will not win a championship with Mercedes, and this may be the thing that drives him to Ferrari in the future one day. And that's just the bottom line. He's going to be sorely disappointed. And Lewis Hamilton does not have the car development skills to make that a winning car. So unless, as it was said, I think it was, where was it? It was Wind Tunnel. And Bob Varsha was like, or Robin Miller was like, well, unless Adrian Newey is going to Mercedes, how he's going to win, you know, how he thinks he's going to win. And that's just it. How does Lewis Hamilton truly think that he's going to win championships with this team? And, I mean, the car sucks. The fact that you would leave McLaren, a car who's won more races than any other manufacturer the last 5 years, has been a solid title contender regardless. And
well, just like I'm okay. Let's back off this for a second. Thinking about Lewis's mentality, fast driver. He's been told that he's a lightning fast driver and a champion caliber driver for whatever, right? Mm. By McLaren, who basically raised him up from karting, and now if you look at really how the dynamic at McLaren has been developing, the best that you could say is that he and Button are on par, but I think you're starting to see some favoritism towards Button on the team, and I think Hamilton, I think his ego was kind of getting in the way. You know, he wants to be the numero uno driver. He wants to be the head honcho, the man. And he wasn't. He was starting to get that he just wasn't at McLaren, and maybe he saw at Mercedes he could have that number one status again and be the hombre to deal with on the team. Even though he might not be able to win, I don't know. Is the ego so strong? Is the arrogance so high to think that he would be able to pull that team up? I don't know, but I really think that is more than anything, it was the kind of the attitude and the environment that was developing at McLaren, where Jensen was taking a more significant role that made Hamilton maybe think that the grass was greener over on the Mercedes side of the fence. I don't think that's right. I agree with you that it's probably a bad decision to move to Mercedes. But I mean, there it is. Move to Mercedes away from McLaren. But looking at it from his standpoint, from his mentality, maybe that's what he was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, the big question.
Well, at the end of the day is this: Schumacher's the 7 times champion.
Yeah. Where does he go now?
Well, that's a good question. And the question is, you've got to start by looking at who is going to be, there's two teams that jump off the page. And this is how, and this is truly how I truly believe this in my heart of hearts. This is how I see this happening. And say what you will, laugh at me if you will. I think now that Perez is out of Sauber, I think that Ferrari drops Massa, regardless of what they've said about future prospects for Massa. I think they truly drop Massa to Sauber, run the Ferrari engine. He stays somewhat with Ferrari. And I truly believe, in my heart of hearts, that Michael Schumacher goes to Ferrari for one more year while keeps the seat warm for whoever that driver would be in 2014, whether it be Kimi, whether it be, you know, whoever. Paul Di Resta. I genuinely think that Schumacher goes back to Ferrari, retires properly with Ferrari, and has a chance to win races. People say, well, Felipe Massa's number two, Schumacher's just going to go in and be Alonso's number two. Not so, because if you remember, both Massa and Alonso start the season on equal footing.
do you really believe that?
Yes, I really do think they do. The problem is Alonso's good and Massa pisses it away. He's not been the same since the accident at the Hungaroring when he got clobbered in the noodle with a spring out of Barrichello's Braun car.
I agree with that. He hasn't been the same driver. He was a driver capable of winning a championship in the right conditions. Mm-hmm. And he was so close to it.
World champion for six
seconds. Yes. So close. But now, I hate to say it. It sucks to say it, but the spring did him in. Mm-hmm. And he's not the same driver that he was. And, I don't know how you can think that he and Alonso start off as equals on the team. Alonso is always going to get the favored position. How do you even start defending that they come in equal? That Alonso, just by the resume that both bring, that Alonso doesn't automatically get the preferential nod.
Because there's no development race at the very beginning of the season. At the very beginning of the season, you have a car that you think is good enough to grid. You're not developing new parts. There's no preferential parts to be given at the start of the season. And you need to run both on equal footing, because who's to say, much like what happened with Red Bull, when the Renault engines were failing all the time for Vettel's car, and we were like, oh, well, maybe Weber should be number one treatment. You have to run both drivers because you want both the driver's title and the manufacturer's title. Now, obviously...
Okay, but if you've got a situation... hear me out. If you've got a situation where you've got two potential race strategies, and you look at the odds, and it's 7-5, one versus the other. It's close to a 50-50, but not quite. And so... you take the slightly better edge, the slightly favorable scenario, and you give that to Alonso. And you take the one that's maybe not as likely to happen, but could play out if everything works out just right, you give that. I don't think you ever would put it the other way around, even on the very first race there at Australia. I just don't. So that's why I say I understand what you're saying about the beginning. Development is equal. You need equal time in both cars, running as much data as you can get. But still, I think your number one guy has got to be Alonso.
Naturally, Alonso is going to be, everybody's going to say, well, Alonso, you're number one. Alonso, you're the best driver. I get that.
He is.
But at the beginning of the year, everybody, I think, starts on that level playing field, and the performance, which inherently always goes Alonso's way, that is what judges who's going to – because if Alonso wrecks out of, you know, the first 5-6 Grand Prix or has a failure or finishes down in the points because of piss poor race strategy, you're going to want to have somebody that's close, and you're banking on Massa to finish well, and that's why Massa's under fire, is he's not performed well when Alonso has not been at the top. And here's another reason why I think that that Schumacher is a good fit at Ferrari. The problem with the Mercedes is tires. It cannot handle the tires. It cannot preserve the tires.
They've been struggling, yeah.
The Ferrari has made its bread and butter in managing tire degradation throughout the run of a race.
You know, that brings up something. Think of Hamilton, who is well known for not so good tire management, being a little harsh and aggressive and rough on his tires, going to a team that has had troubles with tire degradation. That'll be interesting. But
I'm telling you now with 100% straight face that I think that right now that Ferrari is the best hope for Schumacher. I see a lot of people think that Schumacher's, you know, could potentially go to Sauber, and the Sauber is
pretty... Yeah, I can't see him taking a Sauber job either. You know,
Don't get me wrong, Sauber's a great team. They've done very well this year with the drivers they have. But doesn't do that.
Yeah, that's it. You know, it's not the type of drive that Schumacher's going to be going for. DTM, I think, is where we end up seeing him. Now, think about this. How cool would it be if in 2014 Schumacher goes to the WTCC?
Oh, that'd be crazy.
Schumacher versus Loeb?
Yeah, that'd
be... Man, tell me that wouldn't be epic.
Well, you get people like, who's in there? You get a, who's that great guy, the Italian, that drives in the WTCC? Is it Tarkkanen, I think is his name? I don't know, but it'd be a great field. You've got old Formula One drivers in the field as well. Tarkini, I think it is? I don't know. But... some have said, as Nick points out in the chat room here at ETV Live, that Schumacher potentially could go to Williams because it doesn't. But I don't think so, because I don't think that Schumacher. I don't think that Schumacher. Williams is a so-so car.
I don't think he goes to a second-tier team like that.
I really think that, like you said, it'll be like I said Ferrari, or like you said DTM. And I think that I genuinely think there's a great chance that he goes to Ferrari, because you got to think, Schumacher is released from Mercedes. Schumacher is not going to go out getting released by anybody. Schumacher is a 7-time world champion. Schumacher goes out on his own terms, and that's the bottom line. And if people don't like it, you know, as Schumacher would probably clearly tell him, they can kiss his ass, because he's Michael Schumacher. He's a 7-time champion. He'll go out when he's damn good and ready. And, you know, and Mercedes, you know, to me, Mercedes really sold him up the river, and that's what really pisses me off, is the fact that Braun's sitting there saying, and Norbert Hogg, that little shit, sitting there saying, oh, we're waiting for Schumacher. We have no problems waiting. You know, Schumacher's decision, he can make his decision when he wants to make his decision. And they're like, oh, we're saying Lewis Hamilton and Schumacher, you're gone. What?
Yeah.
What? No.
It's Formula One, man.
It's, yeah, but still, I mean, it's one of those things where it's just bullshit, because, you know, you don't treat a 7-time champion who came out of retirement, put his reputation on the line to help your manufacturer, and then you sell his seat out from underneath him to a little twit like Lewis Hamilton. I mean, literally.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far use the adjectives little twit, but I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying.
He's not doing it for the championships. He's doing it because it's more money and less obligation that he has to spend for sponsors. And frankly, I'm going to call the bullshit flag on it, and I don't care what they say. So, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. It isn't about the championship.
Because he's not going to.
Delude himself into thinking that, but no, it is, and it really is about the money. And yeah, I don't begrudge him the money. If I could make that much money, if I could make more money, I would. I would.
Millions of pounds a year, and now you want more millions of pounds a year for?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
It's just bullshit, honestly. But enough about that. We'll see that all unfold. We'll wait for Michael Schumacher. Apparently, October is when he's going to make his play. And I, you know, if Massa doesn't deliver, I think we see Schumacher and Ferrari, and I think we see Massa to Sauber. Like you said, Schumacher doesn't go that way, and I don't think Schumacher goes out on any terms that are not that of Michael Schumacher. But let's talk about 2013 as far as the schedule goes. We did have the schedule released from the FIA's World Motorsport Council meeting. No real surprises. We've got, obviously, Australia, Malaysia, China, Bahrain takes its place back as round four. Spain, that being Barcelona. Then we go to Monaco, Canada. Then, in June 16th, we go to the Grand Prix of New Jersey, or New York, which I actually think there's a strong chance, now that my Sonoma plans are probably not going to come to fruition, there's a good chance when I come back in late May that I hit the Indy 500 on a three-week vacation and then hit the Grand Prix of New Jersey, provided it actually happens. But that is on my list because I've always wanted to go to New York City, and I think that it would be amazing to watch a Formula One race with the Manhattan skyline in the...
Oh, it would.
Then we move on to the Grand Prix of Great Britain, then Germany, Hungary, Spa on the 25th of August, then Monza for Italy, the Grand Prix of Italy, then Singapore, Korea, Japan, India, Abu Dhabi, and then the penultimate round will be held, the Grand Prix of the United States in Austin, Texas. And then the last season finale, obviously, will be the Grand Prix of Brazil in Sao Paulo at the Autodroma, you know, and all that stuff. Whatever.
Well, we've got a Grand Prix coming up here this weekend. Another epic track. I love this track. The Grand Prix of Japan, or a Japanese Grand Prix, Nippon Grand Prix, whatever the hell the title is, at Suzuka, there's not much more challenging of a track with a just a wide mix of incredibly tight technical turns and super super fast sweepers. It's a magnificent track.
130R.
Yes, yes. What an epic corner that is! What an epic corner. So I love this event. I love it when Formula One comes to Suzuka. I hate it when I'm playing GT5 with my buddy Phil, and he says, "Hey, let's race on Suzuka." I'm like, "Oh, it's going to kick my ass."
I love Suzuka. I always love driving there. It's fantastic. I just love it. I love 130R. I watched some old videos that Autosport posted on their Facebook page of people just going balls to the wall through 130R, and it's my second favorite corner in racing next to Eau Rouge.
I was going to say Eau Rouge has to be first.
Eau Rouge is my favorite. 130R is next because I was talking to my lieutenant today, whom we always talk about Formula One, and I got him into iRacing and all that stuff, and nice. I scored him some sweet tickets for the 500, so he is like a open paddock fanatic.
Oh, I like that term. We're going to have to start using the open paddock fanatics.
Yes, the
fanatic. There it is.
Yes, I coined it. I'm rich. it's going to be a fantastic event, and I just love it. I love Suzuka. I know when they used to flip-flop back with Fuji. Fuji's a good track too, but nothing, and I mean nothing on this planet, or at least in Japan, is obviously Suzuka and the 130R and all the great corners and technical stuff they have there. So, but let's go ahead and move into our picks because our podium challenge is still going. Mike made up a little bit of time or made up some points against me. You made up quite a bit. Well, you made up some points as well, but you're not really a factor threat anymore, so I've kind of wrote you off. No offense, obviously. No offense.
I'm only 5 points behind Mike.
Offense, my friend. But let's talk about the previews for the Japanese Grand Prix. My pick to win the Japanese Grand Prix is going to be Jenson Button. The guy shines at this track. He did last year. I think that now that he's clearly going to establish himself as the number one at that team, I think that it is going to be Jensen Button's race to lose. I think that Sebastian Vettel will finish P2, and I think that Fernando Alonso will keep his run of good luck and will finish P3 at Suzuka, as that is really, again, we break it down into being a driver's track, and I think that that's where we're going to see those drivers really shine. So Jensen Button first, second place Sebastian Vettel, third going to be Fernando Alonso, with the first out going to be Roman Grosjean going into the first corner. He's going to wipe it out.
Big John Grosjean.
He is,
well, I mean, that's the literal meaning of Grosjean, isn't it?
He is not an open paddock fanatic. In fact, he probably hates us if he's ever even heard of us. So.
Oh, and Nick says we have to spell that with PH, by the way.
PH. What do we got? Oh, yes. Okay.
All right. I was going to tell you to get out of my head. Because, like you, I think this is Button's track. Just like Spa was. And he'll win pole. He'll lead every lap. And that'll be the end of it. He'll win running away with the lead. Behind him will be Vettel. I think this is a good type of track for Vettel and Red Bull. I did not pick Alonso for third, although I do like that choice. My thought here was Kimi.
Oh, no.
I have not given Kimi a lot of props this year, but I think I will here at Suzuka. First out. Okay, I know Andy's gonna pile some hate on me. He's already piling a lot of hate on you. I already know it for your comments about Hamilton earlier.
You know what?
I'm
gonna go out and tell him one thing. He sent me a couple of rather pointed tweets, kind of disturbing in the sense that he was happy that he was able to taste my tears.
Nice.
Kind of freaky. Kind of a freak. Andy.
Oh, awesome. But anyway,
I'm going to tell him right now that Lewis Hamilton doesn't win a race next year, and while he tastes my tears of disappointment, I'm going to taste his tears of disappointment next year when Hamilton doesn't do a damn thing in that car.
Okay. Well, I am going to invoke the wrath of the speed geek here, and Hamilton's going to be my first pick, my pick for first out. I don't know what's going to happen. But his car isn't going to be all that good. Yeah, you know, he's kind of a lame duck right now. Yes, I know McLaren needs points for the Manufacturers Championship, but you know, I just can't believe that everyone's heart is going to be fully behind Hamilton after the way he's behaved towards the team. So, he's going to be my first pick. Or my pick for first out, either through his own action and aggressiveness or because of mechanical, one of the two. Mike's we'll have to get later. Yeah, if you can disengage from Bear and free up enough time to give us a text, we'll get that put in and have him updated come next week. But we need to move on because IndyCar is looming. And I meant to include this last week.
Yeah,
didn't have time. So very quickly, some SCCA news. I competed in my first autocross a couple weeks ago. It was brilliant. I loved it. Oh my god! I don't know why everybody doesn't do this every single weekend they can. But they had a novice school the Saturday before the event. That I went to. A buddy of mine was signed up for this as well, and so I went around with my camera trying to piece together my first little video documentary. So check it out, a little video documentary on our YouTube channel and there on the video column there at openpaddock.net. Those of you who are more into video have experience with this, I would love the feedback. This is my first time shooting video, and it's so different than shooting still. I mean, it's like, wow, I don't even know where to begin. So any recommendations you have, I would really enjoy. And if you're in the Kansas City area, please come out to the Metropolitan Community College Precision Driving Center. They're right next to the Blue River Community College on 78 Highway. This Sunday, October 7th, event number 10 for the Kansas City Region SCCA. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be behind my little Focus again, trying to stick it to all the other H-stock people, I will say, nicely.
I think there's a chance, depending on if money allows it, that I may bring the TIE Fighter.
Nice. Yeah. So, Mazda 3, is that H as well? Is that an H-stock car?
I have to check, because I run a bigger 2.5 at 170 horsepower, so it wouldn't really be fair.
No, that's the same as the SVT.
Yeah, so...
the same horsepower, so...
Yeah, so we'll see what we do.
Yeah, it's on that border. You might be E-stock instead of H-stock, so... Hey, but anyway...
Let's make the announcement that you and I, Doug, on the 14th, Sunday, October the 14th, are both going to be competing, obviously separately. We're not going to be driver, co-driver, but we will be sharing a ride, as yours is better outfitted for it. We are going to be driving your Focus in the Rallycross.
Yes.
We'll be competing in a rally event.
I am so excited about this. This is the Kansas City Region's first Rallycross event. So everybody's just going out there basically to have a lot of fun in the dirt. And again, taking my little Focus and sling it around. And, you know, you might have me on the tarmac. I don't know. We'll see. But on dirt, hey, I've got the seat time when it comes to driving on dirt.
Oh, you are
you're no slouch. You handle the gravel stages around the house pretty nicely in the Mazda 3. But you know, this is something I do every day, twice a day.
Bring it! Yeah, I will bet you. We'll bet you a vodka versus a fine Irish whiskey that I beat you.
You know, let's over this coming week negotiate the details of this, and then we'll have an official bet to announce on next week's show.
All right.
So anyway, now we move into we've blown most of our show time on the motorsports in quotes brief. But
that's what they get for selling their season short.
I know, right? And so now, IndyCar, we have the 2013 schedule announcement, our 19 races over, 16 events, I believe, right? So it's not the 19 races that we had originally, or 19 event weekends that we were originally promised. It's 19 races. But there is a couple of nice things. With the 16 event locations, how they're getting to 19 is they're having doubleheaders at Belle Isle, at Toronto, and at Houston. And so we're going back to Houston. Okay, it's a great market to be in, right? That track sucks. I mean, it really does. I remember the cart being there. I remember watching the MX5 Cup there run in the dark. Oh, man, it sucked. But hey, it's a great place to go. It's a great market to serve. So, a couple of the things that stick out in my mind, some really nice things to have handy, where was I going? I was going with two thoughts, and the one I was going to type came out vocally. It's like, man, I'm glad I don't do this for a living. But anyway, the thing that that I really like about this event, you mentioned it earlier, was Pocono. You know, we've got another oval on the circuit. We keep Texas, we keep Milwaukee, we keep Iowa. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep the Auto Club Speedway at Fontana as our finale. But adding Pocono is fantastic. You know, the tricky triangle. I'll take whatever ovals we can to kind of bring it back to a 50-50, but I really like the fact that we're bringing back some unique geometry ovals, you know, like Pocono, like the Milwaukee Mile, you know, a flat mile. It's some ovals that require some real driving prowess and some engineering prowess. I mean, Pocono is such a challenge to both the driver and the engineers, because you can get two of the three corners right, but not all three all at once. I'm excited about this. The other thing I'm excited about is that they're grouping, they're blocking up the races per broadcaster. So we start out four races opening the season on NBC Sports Network, and then beginning with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, we have a block of four races on ABC. Milwaukee Mile will be on NBC, but then back with two more races on ABC, and then finishing out the season on NBC Sports Network. So none of this back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, what channel is it on this week kind of crap. You know, nice big blocks where you're sure where the races are going to be.
Yeah. Well, here's my thing. I think that what the IndyCar has done with the schedule, I think the schedule's okay, like a lot of people have said, with what we have to work with. My problem is this. I was told there were going to be surprises that I had not heard or that were not reported on the schedule. I was told that, you know, stay tuned. There are things, you know, Robin Miller saying there's things in there that's been, you know, that haven't been reported, and they're surprises. And I got the schedule, and you know what? I was not impressed. And
well, okay, already okay.
For double headers, I already knew that the road courses were the key candidates for said double headers. And guess what? There's no Circuit of the Americas. There's no Phoenix. There's no Mazda. I'm happy with Pocono. Don't get me wrong. Love Pocono. And I'm so happy that there's going to be a race there, because really, honestly, when I look at the schedule, that's the only thing that jumps up at me that's like, oh, this is a good schedule, because Pocono is on there. We've got the Triple Crown with Auto Club Speedway, the Indy 500, and obviously Pocono. But it's shit, because the rest of it, I was told there were things that I did not know about, and there was nothing. It's all the same stuff with just more...
Well, there was one thing that I noticed that I kind of like at the doubleheaders. They're going to try something different. They're going to go with two different style of starts, and so one race they're going to do as a standing start, and the second race of the doubleheader they're going to do as a traditional rolling start. This is cool. You know, I think this is maybe a test for how standing starts will play out at road courses and street courses in the future. But during these doubleheaders, I like the idea of having it both ways. And as Bernard mentioned on Wind Tunnel, it does demonstrate you know, again, the versatility, the diversity of talent that an eyesight IndyCar driver has to have.
Yeah.
You know, not only the diversity of tracks they have to deal with, but, you know, being able to, you know, solidly do a standing start and handle a flying start, you know. And I think that's that was the one surprise that came to me. You're right. All the you know, which races were on there, no surprise. You know, it's pretty much cut and paste from last year with the addition of Houston and then the doubleheaders, right? Other than Houston, is there any Houston and Pocono, beg your pardon, Houston and Pocono, are there any new events? I don't think so. Everything else is in their stock place.
Yep. Huge gaps of time between some of those races. I mean, like, I think September, I don't even think we have a race.
Yeah, you know, Labor Day weekend, we race at Baltimore at our traditional weekend there in Baltimore. And then it's more than a month. So September 1st, we race on the streets of Baltimore. October 5th, we race in Texas, at Houston, Texas, around Reliant Park. Yeah. And so, yeah, that's a huge, huge gap. And those giant gaps like that, those are momentum killers. You've got to put another event in there. Rent out the Kentucky Speedway, if nothing else, man. Get something going. You've got to have an event in mid-September. That's all there is to it. You've got to have an event there.
Yeah.
But anyway, speaking of Pocono,
yeah,
this past Monday.
In the chat room. Don't forget, he's in the chat room as well.
Yeah, yeah. Spike Rogan is Constable Spike Rogan, beg your pardon, is there in the chat room with a bunch of other Open Paddock fanatics. I like that. We're keep using that. But anyway, he lives in the Pocono area. It's just right down the road from him, and he took advantage of the convenient geography or location and was down at Pocono Raceway for their official announcement on Monday. And what a huge array of people, a fantastic array of people they had to talk to. Of course, Randy Bernard was there, CEO of the IndyCar, and Brandon Igdalski. Man, that's a difficult name to pronounce. But anyway, Igdalski is the CEO of Pocono Raceway. And also a few drivers, including Ed Carpenter and the Don of open wheel racing himself, Mario Andretti. And so, first, Spike had some time to talk with a variety of these people. But first, let's take a listen to his conversation with Einsteiner at the. Man, I suck today. I have not had enough vodka. Anyway, here he is with Randy Bernard. I'll just shut up.
Hi, Randy. Spike Rogan.
Spike.
Pack. Haven't seen you. I had to take a season off.
Yeah.
But I live right down the street, so this is easy for me. Just a few things real quick. First of all, what really got the ball rolling eventually for this year, for today to happen?
I think the most important thing was when Brandon came down to St. Petersburg and we met. There's been a lot of fans telling us that they wanted to come, see us here, and Robin Miller talking always about it in his articles. But I think when he met, and I think it was Jenna Fryer sent a tweet out that showed us together, and then all of a sudden it just exploded. And so he came back and did some research and goes, wow, there is some serious interest here. And it just went, it went from built into a great relationship. And I think that my hat's off to Brandon and his team. I mean, we put this together pretty quickly. Started talking in March, and here it is. We're proud to be able to announce it now.
Now, in 2010, we had met at Mockton's Glen, and there were some issues with promotion up there. And you had said you were a little leery on the idea of a 4th of July weekend race. This essentially is a 4th of July weekend at race. What changed that between 2010 and now, since you were, and rightfully so, it went on at Watkins Glen, the turnout was a little rough. What's changed your mind to this point where 4th of July weekend is now a very feasible idea?
Well, I think that what I like about this is we need great ovals, and I think that fans will travel a further distance to go to a great oval race than they would a road course race. And quite honestly, we had some great ovals on our series, our road courses on our series at the time when we had Watkins Glen. And I think that we have that hunger for more ovals, and so if that grows, let's see what. Maybe our prediction's wrong, but we sure think it's going to be right.
Yeah, well, I certainly think from growing up in this area myself, they used to get good crowds here for the IndyCar races. Nazareth used to sell out until the split. Once the split happened, Nazareth was in trouble. And I think now with a unified series in particular, you have a more unified fan base in this region. And not to mention, I know from my personal experience, is a lot of fans from New Jersey, Pennsylvania, who've been going to Baltimore, who've been traveling the country. And I think now that it's in their backyard, it's much easier to do. Because there's also another thing here is there's a group of people who are into cars. They like the idea of racing, but they're not into NASCAR. And this is a great way, I think, personally, lure them in. A lot of the import car crowd and everything like that. So, but hey.
Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you so much.
Good seeing you.
I'm glad my efforts after all these years have finally paid off.
Well, good to see you. Thank you.
Good to see you.
Much.
Thank you.
Okay, so there we go. We have Randy Bernard. Great job from Spike getting that interview. Doug?
You know, it it really wasn't anything that we didn't expect, but it was a lot of things that were really nice to hear. This is a bastion of open wheel fandom. So much rich history here at Pocono. It was very, very nice, and yeah, I'm hoping that that we can stay here for quite a while, for a good long time. And you know, thanks very much for Rain and Bernard taking time to speak with us. Fantastic guy. Always willing to take a little time to talk to us small people.
Yes, of course. He's been a very good advocate for bloggers all across.
Yeah, he really has. He's been, you know, much more so than you know, a lot of other, you know, of the elite names you could think of in the sport. You know, he has gone out of his way to really be accessible, and it's been fantastic. You know, one thing that has been very, very cool about the return to Pocono is, of course, what Pocono was originally a part of, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Triple Crown. Absolutely. By the way, before we move on to the Triple Crown, I should say, if you want to hear more of Spike's interviews, and especially Spike's interview with Mario Andretti, which is brilliant, head over to openpaddock.net and check out the special edition Spike's interviews at Pocono Raceway. It's also there in your podcast feed, and so check it out, take a listen. Really amazing stuff. And he has a nice long conversation with Mr. Igdalski as well. Absolutely brilliant. But anyway, yeah, the Triple Crown is back. You know, people have been jonesing for this for a long time, and it's so cool to see this back. The Triple Crown, Indianapolis 500, the Pocono 400, and the 500-mile race at Fontana. If someone wins all three of those races, they will get $1 million. You got to say that, you know, like $1 million with the pinky and all that. But anyway, so $1 million for someone who wins all three in the same season. If they win two out of three ain't bad. That still gets you $250,000, $250,000. So, yeah, this is really cool. You know, it's so nice to have this back. And they had the last Triple Crown winning car there on at the announcement. So that was pretty neat. But moving on, silly season is up amongst us, and there's a lot of silliness already afoot.
All right, well, why don't you let us know what that silliness is, because I don't think I've seen the silliness that you're alluding to.
Well, first of all, would refer you to an article by our own Kevin Neely, who kind of went down through and was looking at some of the, you know, team by team, what 2013 was looking like for them. You know, the biggest surprise to me is Team Penske and Ryan Hunter-Reay. The word has it that someone actually turned the captain down.
Well, one
both
turned him down.
Ryan Hunter-Reay and Simon Pagenaud had turned down offers from Team Penske.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happened there? You know, if you know, in the 80s, 90s, Roger Penske calls you up, says you want to drive. You just say, yes, sir. When can I come to work? And no, and I think deservedly so after the last few seasons that we've seen, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think we gotta remember as well that Pagenaud didn't turn down Penske in the sense that he was like, no, I'm not going to come drive for you. It was the fact that he has a very solid contract with Honda and also the, obviously, the Schmidt-Hamilton operation that's going on over there. So it's not like he said no because he didn't want to. I'm sure that he'd love to because it gives you a great... It gives you a great chance to win races, and you might not get that chance with Schmidt-Hamilton. But the fact is this, you know, he's stuck, I think. And I think there was even an article that was actually mentioned about it. It was like, yeah, his contract is like ironclad. I mean, this isn't one of those Formula One kind of deals where it's like, oh, hey, it's like, oh, let's just go ahead and you know, leave. I mean, the contract doesn't really mean anything. I think it's one of those things where it's like, you're not going anywhere because you can't.
Yeah. Well, you know, still, you know, Ryan Hunter Ray's in a contract season, and he turned the captain down as well.
Yeah,
you know, it looks like that. You know, there's no one of significance to move into that seat, into Ryan Briscoe's seat. Then that ride evaporates. Ryan Briscoe, I think, is left out in the cold. You know, as a lot of us have been kind of suspecting for the past couple of seasons, quite honestly, I think there are a lot of us that were surprised that he came back, that Penske ran a third team this year. I think the only reason they did was because of Izod. If it had not been for Izod, I don't think Briscoe has a ride for 2012. I really don't. And well, he definitely doesn't have one for 2013, or at least not with Penske. So be interesting to see what happens with Briscoe. Yeah, does he move to a mid-range team? Does he take over one of the rapidly becoming available seats at KV? Because we know Barrichello is gone. He's going elsewhere. Viso is not entirely pleased with KV. I think Kanaan is coming back, but I think that's the only person that they have. They let go of a crap ton of employees. Which is not terribly unheard of in the off season. A lot of these positions are seasonal anyway, but that's a lot to be letting go all at once. And they lost their who was it? There was an announcement about this earlier, and now I've forgotten it. Carp. It was. Dang it. It was some pretty high up. I want to say it was one of their chief engineers with the team. And now, of course, I can't find the notes, and my brain is shot this evening. Spike might have a notion about this there in the chat room. I can't think of it now. It's gone. It's completely shot. But anyway, I do remember that they had a significant team member high up in the engineering echelon there leave the team. So KV is really becoming an empty shell, a shadow of what it once was. It's going to suck to be Kanaan next year. It really is. Unless something drastic happens at KV, it's just going to suck to be Tony Kanaan. Does someone else come in to fill that space? Kevin Neely seems to think that Guerrieri might. I don't know. I think if he has the money that Guerrieri comes in somewhere, then KV might not be a bad spot. But, I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, your thoughts on KV?
Well, I think, there needs to be some hemorrhaging stopped at KV. I think that, obviously, right now, Barrichello doesn't want to drive there. A lot of house cleaning going on. You know, they're going to have TK. I think there's a few guys that could slot in there. This would be a great team, honestly, for some of the newer Mazda Road Indy guys if they can bring the sponsorship. But, you know, it's really one of those things where, you know, KV's got to do some soul searching because they performed like garbage this year compared to what they were supposed to. And, you know, I think that it's really something where they need to kind of look, dig down deep and see what all, you know, see what they can, what's best for the team. Obviously, next year I think will be a rebuilding year for KV as a whole. But I think, you know, they've got a nice Chevrolet engine underneath them. They don't have to worry really about that. And I, you know, I think that, you know, Jimmy Vassar is a class act, a fantastic team owner. And, you know, I think it'll work out for him in the long run, but I don't really know a name that you could really throw in that other seat alongside. I think right now what they could probably hope for is maybe a team up with Ed Carpenter, honestly. And that whole outfit would do both teams well, both veteran drivers of the championship. And, you know, that would probably be the best thing, but I think it would be great to see a young face in there, a Guerrieri, or maybe like a Yakumen or somebody like that, you know.
Now, Yakumen, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Spike brings up a good point that maybe Catherine Legg and the True Car sponsorship could end up there in KV, because whoever they bring in, they're going to have to be bringing in money. They're not just coming in for a paid drive. I bet you dollars to pesos that they are not with Jay Penske's team next year. Absolutely not. Oh, and it was Mark Johnson, was the guy I was trying to think of, resigned as KV Racing's technology general manager. He had been with the team for a while and had resigned right at the end of this year, right at the end of this season, so... That's the guy I was trying to remember. I saw that fly by in all the pressers, but it got lost in my head. So anyway, sorry to get us off track there a little bit. You know, right now we're still, you know, other big silly season stuff. I don't think there's a lot of. Everything's kind of up in the air. Let's see what kind of happens. I really don't know where Takuma ends up. Maybe he stays with Ray Hall, Letterman, Lanigan, but I don't know. I hope he stays with the series somewhere. I love watching Sato race. I'd hate to see him go away.
Yeah, I think that Sato would be. I think Sato would be a great fit at Ray Hall, because Ray Hall's done such a good job this year in trying to coach Sato. He almost won the Indy 500. I mean, he's almost won a couple races. He's run pretty well, and you know, I think it's phenomenal. What maybe another year or two of coaching under the Ray Hall banner, if you will. I think it would do Sato good, and I think we'd see Sato win a race or two. And it'll be interesting. But I think Sato stays at Ray Hall Letterman. I think they expand to a two car team with Son Graham, and we see a Sato Ray Hall team for 2013. I think that would be probably the best case scenario for both drivers. I think both drivers are about equally skilled, and I think that they would push each other for better results.
Ooh, whoa. Graham Ray Hall, equally skilled with Takuma Sato.
I think so, because I think, you know, granted, okay, Sato's had some accidents, and he's not done.
Okay, he's an aggressive kind of guy.
But I think pound for pound, you put him on a road course or oval against Graham Ray Hall, and I think they're at about the same level. I don't think Graham Ray Hall is. I don't think Graham Ray Hall's as great as what. I don't think Ray Hall's as great as what everybody wants to lead on. He performed well in the Ganassi car, but he also underperformed a lot. He's a whiny bitch, and that's just the way it is. And
I'm not saying that they aren't equal. Because Ray Hall's driving skills aren't up to par. They are. Driving wise, he is very skilled. Where I think the differentiation comes is in the data analysis and car development skills. I think that's where the experience and expertise of Sato puts him ahead of Graham.
Well, yeah,
and Mike makes a great point. Graham could learn some humility lessons from Sato. Sato has always been, as aggressive and right out there as he is on the track. He is the coolest guy when he gets out of the car. He's cool as the other side of the pillow.
Yeah. Yeah, I like Sato, and I just would like to see him stay at Ray Hall, honestly. I think it would be the best possible outcome for him. So,
well, the along with all the driver silly season stuff, there's kind of the silliest of silly rumors flying around yet again that Tony Holman George has put together a group of fellow team owners and industrialists in Indianapolis to take over IndyCar.
Hmm.
Reportedly, Michael Andretti was part of this group, and I forget where I saw this, but he had mentioned, it might have been on Twitter, that it was news to him that he was part of a takeover group. There's an article in the Sports Business Daily that talks about this and these various links, and you read the article and it's alleged this and reported that and supposed this other thing, and it's like, what are you reporting? You're reporting what some homeless bum there on the circle told you in a drunken fit of depression? What is all this wishy-washy stuff? Go talk to the people. When you have something solid, then come back and write about it. But, I mean, if you're just going to say, well, we heard this and there's rumors of that, oh, hell, just go to Track Forum and post it there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Don't post it as a piece of proper journalism. And, in fact, Belkis was quoted on Motorsport.com. Did do due diligence of this and get a hold of somebody and actually get some quotes, get some response. And Belka said bullshit in a little bit more words, a little bit more precise word or pleasant words than that. But you whittle away all the pleasantries, and that's what it comes down to: is that this rumor stuff is a bunch of crap. It's inaccurate, baseless, and just plain not true.
Hmm.
I don't know. This rumor, it's kind of like the rumor that keeps cropping up every August and in September, right as the semester is beginning, that Mars is going to be as big as the full moon in the sky. And I'm like, no, stop it. Quit it with the stupid-ass rumors already. And this one ranks right up there. And so, you know, again, until there is something serious and someone's willing to come out in the public eye and say, yes, we have made a bid, then just stop it.
Yeah.
Stop already.
I agree. I think that it's only stuff like this that continues to plague the championship, much like a cancer. It's obvious that Bernard said he is not going to leave beforehand, and you know, nobody on the board has made any kind of indication that IndyCar was going to be in any kind of sales position. And I think, you know, I agree with you. Stop. You don't have any facts to base this on. It's just another stupid story that surfaces that generates, and you know, not even interest, but just drama in the championship. And it's like, come on, we're past that. We need to move along. So,
that's all I had for IndyCar. Did you have anything else for IndyCar?
I have nothing else for IndyCar. I know that you have a couple things as far as the Winterfest and the Mazda Road to Indy program goes, so go ahead and let us know your announcements so that way we can move into the ETV live calendar as well.
Yes, the open wheel racing calendar for me begins in February, early February. We always think of the first racing event of the year, of course, is the Dakar, right? Not in Dakar.
I always write it off as being Monte Carlo. I know Dakar is like the first rally, but I always think my motorsport season really starts when Monte Carlo rally.
Monte Carlo, yeah. And for some, you know, it's the 24 hours of Daytona. And that's fine, too. You know, it's a fun event to watch. But the open wheel events, the open wheel calendar for me begins in early February when the USF 2000 series holds its Winterfest. And just like last year, it's going to be a six-round little mini-series held at Sebring during the same weekend as the ALMS test and at Palm Beach International Raceway, with each venue holding three races. The three races at Sebring will be on February 5th and 6th, and the three races at Palm Beach International will be on February 9th and 10th.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, real quick, rapid succession. It's a great opportunity for drivers coming in, like the national champion, Heinrich Verhusseth, who's going to get a scholarship into the championship, into a championship ride, you know, top class ride there in USF 2000. Good chance for him to get familiar with the new equipment. Other drivers coming in from Skip Barber or from the Formula 1600s get used to the different equipment. Also, an opportunity for teams to test out drivers in a genuinely competitive situation. You know, a guy circulating around the track may look fast until you put a couple of guys next to him, and all of a sudden he sucks. Right, you know, so this is a good chance to evaluate talent in a real competitive situation, and you know, if it's anything like last year, or anything like the races this year, you know, you can bet that there will be not just live timing and scoring, but at the minimum, a chat room where you can chat with fellow USF 2000 fans and a bunch of the USF 2000 officials, and hopefully. Hopefully, they will also have some audio. Doubt they'll have any video, but maybe audio. You can listen to Rob and his very excited and enthusiastic race calling. But at Sebring, bandwidth is scarce. So, we'll see. But anyway, the dates are announced. Testing is upcoming at Indianapolis, at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the road course. The middle of this month, I'll have more on that later, and maybe a report from Artie Greenemeyer from there at the testing. We'll see. We've been missing Artie at the track this year. He's been putting together some really, really cool projects. We're hoping to he'll be able to be in a position to announce some of those here coming up very, very soon.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's all we have for tonight. We're going to get into the ETV calendar real quick. I got just a couple events. I know we got the October 4th starting at 7 p.m. We've got the Gunnar 4. October 7th, we've got the POWRI Lucas Oil Sim Pro Championship. That's starting, I'm not sure what time that is. And then obviously Monday, October the 8th, 2012, we have Wesley Outland. And the winner is here on ETV Live, another radio talk show. Great drivers and everything they had lined up this last week. I was supposed to talk with Jack Root. Jack Root was out because of some illnesses, so we weren't able to talk with him. But this Monday, I should be on the show with Jack to talk all things IndyCar with Wesley Outland. Really just a phenomenal broadcast that he puts together there. It's great. It's just a great show to listen to, and please tune in. If you like anything dirt car, or if you are a NASCAR fan, I know we have a few of them out there, you know, definitely it is worth your time on Monday night. And then, you know, obviously you have the Formula One blog podcast as well coming out. So keep it here this off season. A lot of great stuff going on here in, you know, in the keep it here at ETV Live anyways, and then also all around the motorsports blog community. But that's all we really have for this week, everybody. I want to say special thank you to everybody who was in the chat room. A special thank you to everybody listening to ETV Live on the HD Radio Network via iTunes. Sean, Ford, Doug, we will talk to you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. So everybody have a good night. Say good night, Doug.
Good night, Doug.